I'm Ed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support on Patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon.com/FU Network TV, and through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Drop us a few bucks. Don't be a freeloader. And now, here's your show.
Now, let's listen.
Well, welcome back to the Stephen Stephen Show. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Stephen. And boy, do we have some interesting things to talk about today, though.
The world's a lively place.
Yeah, unfortunately. Isn't that the Chinese curse? May you live in interesting times?
Yeah.
Yeah, I never understood that when I was a kid. I thought interesting times would be great. I mean, it means it's exciting. It's like, oh, the older you get, the more you realize, you know what? Not so good, interesting times.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want dead, boring times, but maybe a happy medium.
I watched CNN coverage of Donald Trump and the impeachment. And, you know, at first it was like, oh, my God, we've got news all the time. Isn't this great? There's things going on and we can fill the air with all kinds of interesting stories. And now you look at Jake Tapper or Don Lemon or any of those people and they just look tired. And it's like, oh, my God, I've got to report more of this crap. Just like, why can't there be just a slow news day? We can just do some kittens and puppies.
I like Don Lemon very much, but we switched well over a year ago to MSNBC because it's just better coverage and the people are less full of themselves and full of crap.
I'm a media gourmand. I flip around and get all kinds of different sources.
MSNBC is on all the time here. That's why I was very excited when I interviewed Ali Velshi for my other show, The Kersner Experience.
Yeah.
It was a great conversation, and he's one of the smartest men on TV. But anyway, yes, they're exhausted. I mean, I can't imagine a time in news when it has been so consistent. You could usually depend on Fridays being kind of quiet and the weekends being quiet, and you could depend on, you know, there would be some big story that would come up. A little girl fell down a well, and it captured the world's attention or things like that. But then it would go back to normal. But this is the new normal. It's just nonsense. Social media and Donald Trump's inability to control himself or say anything that's not inflammatory and inflammatorily stupid has just, plus the media fighting the clickbait of the internet, where they don't have any real journalistic restrictions or pretensions or interests or ethics. It's just they might as well be doing the news on a hamster wheel constantly.
And then you'll add in the Australian bushfires and Brexit, add in Kobe, add in the coronavirus. I mean, the coronavirus is being pushed off the page and it's like, wait a second, people, it's a plague. It's like, oh, no, we got other things to do.
I think people are a little too far removed from history and just how plagues in the past have shaped human history around the world.
I was saying to my wife, it's like the United States is saying, we've got to repatriate all those people from Wuhan. And it's like, no, they have.
No,
they're sick. You don't move them closer to you.
Yeah, it's like they're sick, like, people, and let's bring them back closer where more people can get sick.
Yeah, that's like, look after them where they are, and then when they're better, you can bring them home.
You know what? If people want to understand how serious this coronavirus is, they should watch the last couple of scenes in the first Planet of the Apes movie that Matt Reeves did,
yes,
where it showed how a contagion spread all over the world, and that's what wound up pretty much wiping out the human race.
Yeah, or you can watch Contagion with Gwyneth Paltrow when her face melts off.
I think it's worth it just for that. I think it melted off because of her and her colloidal silver,
wherever she puts it. Yes.
Yes. Okay. So today, having just introduced, you know, 2020, I'm just waiting. I would just like Christopher Reeve's Superman, may rest in peace, to just fly the world backwards. You know, just turn things around. Just 2020 can go back to where it came from.
You want
to
redo.
2019 was bad enough, but 2020 started out maybe worse. And it's continuing to pick up pace. And it's like, is this the way the world is going to be? Like from now until time immemorial, is this the way that we're going to be living? Which is a horrible headline to horrible headline, horrible person to horrible person, horrible circumstances to horrible circumstances. And then you've got people who are taking horrible circumstances and ramping them up to make them seem worse and scaring the crap out of most people who don't have the time to really sit there and dig in and inform themselves because they've got themselves or a family to feed, you know? And so 2020 can just go back to wherever it came from. Thank you very much.
We can't do that. We're going forward.
Unless they're front loading. 2020 is front loading all the bad stuff. But there's a U.S. election in 2020. So no, they're not front loading all the stuff. It's just going to get, the ugliness. I think people are just so sick of the ugliness.
They're getting tired. It's just there's a real fatigue, and that's the problem.
This electric circus experience that I didn't initiate it, but I basically redesigned it to be much more like a Much Music experience, but using modern tech. I think the reason it was this past weekend, 25th of January. The reason that it was so packed, and people were there having just so much fun, it's because it's a flashlight in the darkness of the world. It's people, and that's the reason there's so many reboots of older shows. People want to remember times when the world made sense and it was okay to be happy, and you could take a breath and you could exhale.
At least it seemed more innocent. It may not have been, but it seems in retrospect.
Well, you know what? For a lot of people, it was not a better time. Yeah. For people of color, for gay people, it was not a better time. For non-binary, it was not a better time. In our minds, when we go back, we were younger. We were less aware of what the world was all about.
And that really was. That was the difference, that we weren't bombarded 24/7 with the news cycle and the internet and all the rest. That's our old man moment for today.
You know what? You don't have to be that old. There's people in their 30s doing it.
It's true.
You know, and in fact, there's even people mid-20s who are like nostalgic when they were 15 because the world has just gotten so crazy.
Oh, but, I don't know. I was watching the Grammys the other day, and one of the, a young songstress, singer came on, and she, they say, "Well, what are you wearing?" She said, "Oh, I'm wearing vintage Chanel. It's from 2012. Wait a second.
Vintage. I have ketchup older than that.
My entire sock drawer is full of vintage socks, if that's the case.
And you know what? The thing is that there's clothing stores out there where you can take your old clothes, beat up as they are, and sell them instead of throwing them out, because they're vintage. People will pay good money and good markup to wear
my
clothes,
old socks.
Yeah, to wear clothes that people wore to death and made them, which is, I guess, better maybe than the 80s when we paid through the nose for acid washed jeans and pre-ripped jeans, jeans that looked like they'd been through the ringer instead of, they were brand new, but they looked like they were 100 years old. They were the first pair of Levi Strauss ever made.
Now, speaking of being through the ringer.
Yes.
How's that for a segue?
Yeah, that's a good one. It's as good as any if we're going to talk about
on the 27th of June of this year, the Conservative Party is going to have their leadership convention.
Unless that changes too. Because
the NDP just changed theirs. They said, we're going to have one this year. But I think basically said, we can't afford it. We got things to focus on. So we're going to put off any leadership review for at least another year. So I think.
The truth is that both of those parties need leadership reviews as soon as possible, because Jagmeet Singh was likable in that last debate where everybody else was seeming to be reading, talking points, and that resurrected the NDP campaign. They were going to be wiped out otherwise. But since then, he has proven to be just as ineffective and, quite frankly, dumb, at least in the things that he says, as he was before that. That's why people, if you hear the opposition party saying they're going to defeat the new NAFTA, don't believe it. Because none of them are ready to fight an election. They'll get killed. It'll be another liberal majority. If they bring down the government over this trade deal, they will get killed. The liberals will have another majority.
Yeah, and I can't, I can't see the conservatives voting against the trade deal because, this was Harper's baby for ages and ages and ages, and they're basically pro-trade.
Conservatives are about trade, at least in Canada. In the U.S., no one knows what conservatives are about anymore.
No.
Used to be about the debt ceiling and deficit and stuff, and that went away, and
it's
used
mostly
to be
just about staying out of jail now.
Yeah, now it's about staying out of jail and staying in office. But it's interesting because of the number of names that were brought up as potential candidates for the conservative leadership. And the number of people who ran exploratory committees, the number of people who hinted that, you know, put out feelers about that they were going to possibly run, and then also people who it was sort of a given they were going to run, all of them one by one backing away.
Yeah. And I oddly enough, you know, I generally am known on the internet as a big liberal loser. So you know, it surprises people to know that Brian Brulotte, who was one of the people who actually announced that he was running, and a nice guy, progressive guy. I know him through a couple of associations, very generous, charitably, and all the rest. And he announced, and I thought, well, good for you. We need good people running, and that's what I told him. You know, not my party, but best of luck to you. And you know, they came out with these rules where, you know, they have short deadlines and almost a third of $1 million as the entrance fee.
You know
you have to be this tall to get into get onto this ride.
And a lot of people aren't that tall, and nor can they do like the Little Rascals used to and just sit on each other's shoulders and wear a big long coat to cover it.
You know, and that's the most expensive entrance fee in Canadian politics for a leadership race. So you know, this isn't your every man kind of contest, but at the same time, we've got all kinds of people. I mean, so Brian Brulotte said, you know, he's a person of means, so I don't think the money was a problem, he said, but the short timetable was a real bar to him. And he also, I think he was a Peter McKay supporter, so he said, you know, if Peter's going to run, then I'm going to pull out. But other people have sort of said, yeah, I'm running. And you know, a couple of them famously, like Pierre Poilievre, announced that he was going to run, and then like an hour later announced he wasn't going to run,
which I was very disappointed about, because
lots of great material there.
Oh, so much material, because that man, every time he opens his mouth, nothing falls out but lies and talking points, which are lies. I mean, the man, he would have been so much fun to just take shots at, because he's not a credible human being as a politician. And the fact that he backed out, I was actually sorry. There's a young man, Aaron Seal, who wants to take the party back to sort of its more centrist conservative roots. I understand he's still in the race, and I think we may talk to him on an upcoming podcast here on the FU Network's FU Politics. But the main guy right now seems to be Peter McKay, and there's a lot of theory that, you know, because Harper dropped out of the Conservative Fund so that he could block Jean Charest from running.
Yes.
Jean Charest's not running. Yeah, Jean Charest decided not to run.
He won't flip from party to party to party. You know, Churchill did it. I'm not sure Jean Charest is a Churchill, but yeah.
No, I wouldn't want him to get us through something as
and you know, and World he's War got II. He's got some, you know, quite aside from the switcheroo on his party affiliation, you know, he's had a number of scandals when he was
There's just Quebec. There's too much to point at there, because quite frankly, if Trudeau is the Liberal leader going into the next election, it's all been exhausted. Every bit of dirty laundry you can pull from that man's past, it's all been used. It's all already baked in. Whereas all these new people, if you've got stuff in your past, it's all just going to be fresh meat. And you know, the theory that Harper was going to dedicate himself to knocking Charest out, making sure he didn't run. Okay, Charest's not running. Now we hear rumors that Harper is considering running because he couldn't stand being beaten by a Trudeau, and that he would probably win the leadership in a walk. I don't know how credible. What do you think? Is that credible?
I don't buy it. I think Harper is, you know, for his many failings, you know, he's not a dumb man, and
not
he
at
also
all.
Knows that he's he could probably, I think he could win the leadership of the Conservative Party, but he wouldn't win the election because, you know,
well, he was already soundly rejected once. All they got to do is bring up the old stock Canadians thing, and he's done again.
Yep, absolutely.
And he's not likable.
No, there's a real visceral dislike for Harper, in certain segments of the population.
Yeah, they're the other side of the population.
About 75% of the population that has that feeling. So if not,
there's a visceral hatred of Trudeau amongst a certain part of the population just because the man exists. But the interesting other theory is that Harper might be trying to clear the decks for Peter McKay to get practically a coronation, because, of course, when you have leadership races, you have each person taking shots at the other person, bringing up, doing oppo research, bringing up things that their political party opponents can use against them when the actual election is called. And so it's always a little bit easier when you have a bit of a coronation. Even though it was always depicted that Harper and McKay did not like each other, and that Harper had nothing but disdain and disrespect for Peter McKay, because after all, McKay became the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party of Canada, vowing not to merge with the Reform or whatever they were calling themselves at the time. Yep. Then he merged with them. I mean, he had no choice. It was like merge or die. The Progressive Conservative Party of Canada was not, you know, in good shape at that time. So there's a lot of conservatives who don't forgive him for that, for having promised not to, and then going and doing it. But in the end, they're conservatives. Who are they going to vote for? But what do you think about that? Do you think that it's possible that Harper knows that a guy like McKay, a young guy, relatively good looking, young guy, could potentially, especially one who seems to be a little bit more moderate, could potentially win the election, whereas all these other guys, it's just going to be another Trudeau win or Liberal win?
Well, you know, you said the magic word, and this is one of the reasons I still have trouble believing that Harper will get behind McKay, is moderation, because McKay, you know, has his reputation of being a moderate. He's not a social conservative, certainly not the barking, drooling social conservatives that has become really the mainstream of the Conservative Party the last little while. And you know, Harper's an ideologue. And McKay is more of a pragmatist. He is more of a bare knuckle maritime politician. And there were enough sort of patronage scandals and things that attached to McKay during his tenure, because that's like Quebec, the Maritimes is a place where you reward your friends and punish your enemies. But through it all, McKay though has been. You wouldn't say he's a hard right conservative either on social policies or on the economy.
No.
And so I don't think he's Harper's kind of guy, except for the fact that maybe he could win. And if he wins, then where does the party go if he's the leader? I don't think it goes in the direction that Harper likes, because if anything, Harper is getting more right wing in his retirement than he was as prime minister.
Retirement. The man is going around the world helping to get right-wing fanatics elected. That's usually retirement is like crossword puzzles.
And he hangs out with the Sid Adelsons of the world, and
and supports Viktor Orban, who in Hungary, who made it illegal to be poor. I wish he would retire. Just retire, write some books about hockey, and play some more piano. Or whatever. Interesting thing about Harper is when I was talking to Mark Critch of This Hour is 22 Minutes, he said that off camera, Harper had the best sense of humor of any of the politicians.
Well, he hides
but
it
he
well.
He just didn't show it on camera. That wasn't his brand. But off camera, he had a really good sense of humor. And that surprised the hell out of me. But, McKay does cut somewhat a similar figure to Justin Trudeau, as far as his age, his physical build, things of that nature. I mean, I'm convinced that one of the reasons that Jagmeet Singh got elected to be the leader of the NDP is he was Justin Trudeau, but even more left because he was brown. So it showed that they were even more liberal and more left-wing. Though there's the nuts and bolts of it is that he went around to all of the religious temples of which he's affiliated and sold memberships, and people showed up and voted him in. And he's not the first person from any ethnicity to have done that. But, you know, I liked Peter McKay for a while.
Well, so did Belinda Stronach.
Yes, for a while.
For a while.
I thought, that Canada could do far worse, because I've always said that we really do need a reasonable Conservative Party in this Canada, in this country, to balance out a reasonable, to have a Liberal Party and the NDP, which is further left. We don't need this massive chasm between right and left, because the Liberals just pulled further left in order to kneecap the NDP support, and so the center is just not there. And, you know, we don't have to talk about, you just did what happened with the Conservatives, how far right they pulled everything. And I really think Canadians exist politically in the center of those two movements. And so I've thought and I've said that I would really like a competitive Conservative Party that doesn't try to poo-poo or discourage or call climate change a lie, and that isn't punitive towards people who are the most vulnerable, and doesn't engage in the kind of vitriol that we saw out of that cardboard box, Andrew Scheer. I thought, you know, we need that, and it looked to me like Peter McKay could deliver it.
I think that that's right. I mean, I think he certainly comes across as, I mean, if anything comes across as kind of bland, which, you know, is the Canadian brand. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, there's something kind of, you know, he doesn't have sort of the Darth Vader overtones that Harper had. He doesn't have sort of the smarmy smugness that with dimples that Scheer had, you know, as he was riding herd on a bunch of social conservatives. So yeah, I think there's a lot to, you know, a lot of people would look at that and go, yeah, that is sellable to the Canadian voter.
Yeah, now, I mean, there are. Go on.
No. Well, I was going to say, but there are people within the Conservative Party who still haven't forgiven him for the betrayal, as Orchard said in 2003. The progressive conservatives, although they were his people, they may be the people who are the maddest at him. Although in politics, you know, forgive.
Where
and
do
forget.
They go? Where else do they go? They don't. Well, that's the thing about conservatives. Conservatives stick together. They really do. They stick together and they support their own, and they vote as a block. They vote conservative. Whereas people on the left are all about trying to point out that the other guy isn't as left as they are.
They don't pass the purity test.
Yeah, it's like the left just eats itself alive constantly. Now you remember a few moments ago, I said that I did like Peter McKay at one point.
Yes. What changed your mind?
Well, it was an interview with, of all people, Brian Lilly, who at one point in time was a journalist, but still writes for the Toronto Sun. it's interesting that he did an interview with Peter McKay, and what surprises me is that he was able to hear McKay's answers, because usually Lilly has his head so far up the ass of whoever the conservative leader is or front runner is, I think that'd be difficult for him to have, you know, clear auditory. But maybe he had a recorder going. But he, in response to this theory that some people could paint McKay as yesterday's man versus Justin Trudeau, the quote from McKay was, "I think people will have to judge for themselves my youthfulness. I'm a guy who likes to stay active. Trudeau does yoga. I play hockey."
Yes.
Okay. And right then and there, I was like, okay, you, Peter McKay, are as big a douchebag as the other people in your party. You're a penis swinger. Somebody who, again, tries to depict Justin Trudeau as a latte liberal, as, somebody who's effeminate. Because the man says it's okay to care about, you know, to have empathy and to cry and all these other things. He's going the same way. And, you know, I'd like to remind him that even though Justin Trudeau does yoga, Justin Trudeau also boxes. And I would love to see Peter McKay get into a boxing ring with Justin Trudeau the way Justin Trudeau did with Patrick Brazeau, this big bruiser, and Trudeau beat the living tar out of him. So, you know, for all this, this talk about McKay being he's a kinder, friendlier face for that.
This is a new Conservative Party. Yeah, we're not going to be the party of whiners and people who make homophobic jokes.
He's still, with that comment, it proved to me this is still a guy who is going in the direction of conservatism is masculine. And masculine is everything that feminine isn't. So masculine is a lack of empathy, being somebody who is just totally fiscally conservative. And if people are poor, it's their own fault. They got to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and show what, you know, show their mettle. Like just all of that, that penis swinging that conservatism has become. Because a lot of people who identify themselves as conservatives nowadays are not political conservatives who even understand or know what political conservatism is as a philosophy. They're guys who are trying to cling to their masculinity, and they believe that the traditional view of masculinity is what the conservatives stand for, which is just basically a complete disdain for anything which shows the least bit of sensitivity to people who aren't, you know, white males.
Yeah, and, you know, some of that masculinity part, too. I mean, he was, you know, some of the scandals that were associated with him while he was in the Harper government. I mean, who can forget the F-35 boondoggle?
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody. A lot of Canadians can forget it.
Well,
and most of them have.
There's that famous photo opportunity that they did in the mock-up of an F-35 fighter jet cockpit. I mean, talking about, you know, top-gunning it around and being masculine, and it turned out that somebody leaked that that the photo op itself cost $47,000 just for him to give a thumbs up sitting in the cockpit looking like Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
And you know, there's, you know, the whole helicopter, it was called Cormorant Gate in 2011.
2011 may as well be 1811.
Well, I know. Nowadays, as I said, 2012 is vintage now, so people don't remember anymore.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that stuff people will be less interested in hearing about. I mean, I think that those are the kind of things that if you pound the table hard enough on them, those are the stickies that I call them, which are the things that go past people's cognitive receptors and stick in the back of their brain where they're not quite sure why they don't just, why they distrust somebody or don't feel comfortable around them. They just know that they don't. And the reason is all of these things that it didn't pass through a cognitive filter. It just went straight to the subconscious. That might be something that could work, but.
Yeah. And, you know, again, on the macho hard right conservative side too, I mean, there's pictures that are recirculating now as his name is becoming more prominent as a real contender for the conservatives. There was, he attended a conference and was convinced to put on a Canadian Firearms Association t-shirt, a black t-shirt.
Yeah, it looked to me like a sweater.
It was a pullover of some sort. It was either a t-shirt he pulled over a sweater, or it was
something.
But
awkward.
But it had a half Canadian maple leaf and half an AR-15 on it. You know, with the muzzle pointing up to his head.
Which is the odd thing is the muzzle pointing up to somebody's head. Why would you wear that if you're a supporter of? It's like the I'm with stupid shirts with the arrow pointing up. Like, why would you want to walk around with a shirt where the muzzle of the gun is pointing at your head?
Well, and I did, you know, if this is now, God, it's got to be 6 or 7 years ago that, and I remember having a lot of fun, you know, just throwing that into Photoshop and doing all kinds of things with the t-shirt. I'll have to dig them all out again.
Yes, please do.
I guess they're going to be relevant again.
Yeah.
But, you know, these are things that show that, you know, while he seems to be moderate. Like you said, he panders to the hard right conservatives, the social conservatives, the gun people. I don't think I've seen pronouncements on abortion. I mean, he's sort of I don't know if they've learned their lesson about that. Although Marilyn Gladue hasn't learned that lesson.
Marilyn Gladue is
she's a non-existent private member bills.
Yeah, well, she's non-existent. I mean, that woman is the only person who thinks that she could actually become leader of the progressive of the Conservative Party of Canada is her.
Yeah, well, and she's complaining she's not getting a fair shake from the media. And you should be thankful you're not getting a fair shake, because the more you know her, the more. My favorite moment of hers was, and there's, if you go on YouTube, you can find it, or we'll post it when we post the podcast. It was her coming out at the Conservative convention. I think it was 2014, their annual convention, dressed as death, like literally wearing a black hood and carrying a sickle. And went out and gave a keynote speech dressed as death, and it is funny for all the wrong reasons.
That shows some fine judgment on someone who wants to be the leader of this country.
Well, it's like wearing a T-shirt with a gun pointing at your head. There's
one is pandering, and one is, I know sometimes with people like, you know, with what happened to McKay, you see the picture and he's very clearly standing there smiling with two people who gave him the damn shirt. And sometimes when you're out in public and you're a public figure or you're at an event, people give you a shirt. You don't want to make a scene. So unless it's something that's horrendously offensive, you just pull the thing over for the shirt, for the picture. And you hope it goes away. You know, you hope it gets drowned amidst all the other pictures that come out of it. I don't necessarily know that him wearing that shirt indicates he's some big supporter of gun rights. And gun rights is not a big issue in Canada. We've got good gun control laws. The guns that are hurting people are guns that are illegal in the hands of people who wish to commit illegal acts. And they're usually coming across the border from the States. But do you see anybody coming into, you know, coming onto the stage to rival Peter McKay, somebody in the wings, may not be somebody who was an MP before or a member of government, you know, maybe not Kevin O'Leary, but maybe somebody who is a public face, somebody who has a public persona, who is conservative, who could, who you think realistically, plausibly, could step forward and pose a challenge to him, just the same way all of a sudden Michael Bloomberg you know, showed up in the U.S. As a candidate for the Democrats, and then Tom Steiner, who's running ads against Trump for years out of his own pocket. These two people showed up late in the game and they were game changers. Can you see, do you see anybody on the horizon?
Yeah, you know, in the United States, Bloomberg and Steyer have showed up because they've got billions of dollars behind them and they can spend it. And, you know, that doesn't happen in Canada.
No.
So, you know, I hear Don Cherry, you know, is available.
Well, that ought to be fun.
but no, there isn't. And I think part of this is a result of both Harper and in the Conservatives' way of they don't groom successors because it's very much a strongman kind of show. I mean, even Scheer didn't groom successors. I mean, he probably had rivals, but he didn't promote talent.
Well, how could he promote a successor when he was in fact just a puppet of other people?
Well, yeah, that's the other problem. So what you end up with is a whole bunch of sort of not lackluster former junior cabinet ministers who are,
maybe like Rex Murphy will take a step forward.
Oh my God. Like, O'Toole, certainly doesn't have the royal jelly in my opinion. He's sort of the quality of these second tier cabinet ministers who are kind of left. I mean, Pierre Poilievre, another one. I mean, who thought that he would have any kind of, he certainly has, they all have ambition. I'm not sure. Someone said that there's an MP sitting in Ottawa who doesn't think they'd make a great prime minister. One of my favorite quotes about Pierre Poilievre was when he started announced, someone said that his demeanor is so petulant and repellent as to cross the line into anti-charisma, and his unlikability so reliable it constitutes a talent of its own, as if you could monetize irritation.
That's why I'm sorry he's not running.
And that's a conservative insider who said that. Yeah, that was a conservative.
Boy, would he be fun. Listen, I had conservative insiders telling me during the last election that they despised Scheer, but they're conservative, they're going to vote conservative because they also despise Trudeau.
And you've got Rempel. I mean, Rempel, who is almost a punchline to a joke.
Well,
blocked everybody on Twitter.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of campaigns these days rely on social media to get your message out, and she's blocked 3/4 of Canada. So I don't know how that would work. And the other thing is about the coronation of Peter McKay. You recall the coronation of Paul Martin and everyone, Paul Martin. And Paul Martin, by the way, the best prime minister Canada never had for long enough. He wound up paying for the sins of Jean Chrétien's regime, and which is ironic because he and Chrétien had two separate camps and they nearly tore the Liberal Party apart with the enmity between them. But he wound up, there was a guy who believed in transparency in government. So he set up a commission to investigate his own party, his own, the government he was a part of. And it came back and said that, there was hanky-panky going on amongst Chrétien's people, but that Paul Martin was completely exonerated by it, but people didn't care. All they heard was that the liberals did it. And, you know, people say we want politicians to be transparent. No, you don't, because you sure as hell don't reward them for the effort.
But honesty does not get rewarded.
No, not at all. People say they want honesty. People, it's like Jack Nicholson in A Few Good Men. You want the truth? You can't handle the truth. But he, you know, he was prime minister, and people probably expected he'd be prime minister for quite a while. And if he hadn't called that Gomery commission, he probably would have been. Yep. But just because, you know, somebody is seen as a natural heir and gets a coronation instead of a real leadership, you know, challenge when they're running for the leadership of the party, doesn't mean automatically that they're going to get a real easy ride when they actually become leader of the party. So this idea that, well, you know, McKay will have a coronation and he'll be seen as the, you know, the one true light that can lead the party back to power. Don't be so sure, because the thing also about campaigns, you know, to be leader of your own party, it hardens you. It also gets your team in fighting trim. Yeah. It gives you the experience you're going to need amongst your team and yourself to fight a federal election. And when you just walk in, you don't have any of that experience. So when the federal election happens, you don't have a battle-tested team.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely right. And you think, you know, some of the people who, you know, are kind of hovering around the sidelines, you know, they've either expressed interest or people have put them forward. And, you know, the idea that they can pull together a team, you know, like I say, I mentioned Michelle Rempel. I mean, I can't see her putting together a team. And it's not just a team, it's a national team. And this is the other failing I think the Conservatives are really facing. You know, hardly any of them speak French.
And most of their base is in Alberta.
Exactly. And are they going to be just another Alberta rump party with, you know, somebody from Nose Hill, from where they have safe seats, but the rest of Canada, you know, if you're not going to make headroads into Quebec, you're not going to make headroads into Toronto, you know, sorry, rest of Canada, Toronto has a lot of ridings, and, you know, you have to win a couple of them here, at least, if you want to form a government. You need people who actually have that appeal. So people, you know, they've suggested Christy Clark, the former Premier of British Columbia, but she's, you know, it's not that you can't be from British Columbia, but, you know, she's got her all kinds of problems, but she just doesn't have the apparatus to run this kind of a campaign.
And it's unfortunately, I think there are those who believe she doesn't have the apparatus as far as physical, bodily equipment to get elected as a leader of the Conservatives. But those people forget that, Kim Campbell was our first brief, but first female prime minister, and I think she was a hell of a statesperson, but I don't know. It'll be very interesting to see. I think Harper is behind the scenes. You know what's funny is that this is almost echoing the plot of the most recent and final in the Star Wars trilogy of trilogies, because during when Harper was prime minister, many people called him Palpatine, the emperor, evil emperor from the Star Wars movies. And in this last movie, even though supposedly Palpatine was killed 30 years earlier.
Okay, spoilers. Spoilers coming up. So
okay, if you haven't seen it by now.
What's wrong with you if you haven't seen it by now?
Yeah. Exactly. And by the way, it was a damn good movie. So all you whiners out there.
A good movie.
Yeah, these Star Wars fans out there who are just review bombing it and hating it because they're just whiny babies. Like, these aren't just casual people who like, you know, hey, let's go see a Star Wars movie. These are people who know how the spaceships allegedly function and warp space functions. These are people who are just a little too far into it, and they whine and complain, and they've hurt the movie. That aside, it was revealed that 30 years later, Palpatine wasn't dead, and that he had been pulling the strings that overthrew the new Republic all along. And here we have Harper, who supposedly, Palpatine, who was supposedly a former prime minister, off doing his own thing. It appears that he is pulling the strings right now on what's going to happen with that leadership race, because it looks like, as much as there actually is enmity and disrespect certainly from Harper towards McKay. Harper is smart enough to put that all that aside, recognize this as politics, and it appears he's the one who's probably behind the scenes pulling the strings and sending his people to these potential candidates and saying, yeah, it's a nice career you got here, a nice seat you got here. Be a shame if something happened to it, you know?
And he's still, a fundraising powerhouse, and, the Conservatives have always been able to raise a ton of money. They haven't necessarily spent it well, but they certainly always raised a ton of money. Yeah. And, Harper was in that key position with the Conservative Fund, which he just stepped down from.
He can step right back onto it if he wants. Oh,
absolutely. But, he's still a power broker within that party.
It's like getting off a carousel. You can just, as it turns, you can get back on and get on a different color horse.
Mm-hmm. And, and he was prime minister and leader of the party for a long, long time. Yeah, I mean, he is the creator of the modern conservative party, not the progressive conservative party.
He was the one who killed the modern. He killed the progressive conservative party and gave birth to the conservative party. But it'll be interesting to see. Right now, it appears that Harper is still the power behind the throne and even so behind clearing the path for McKay. Which makes you wonder what it is McKay and he came to an agreement about. You don't know. It's all speculation. Maybe nothing. They may not even have spoken. I know the two men don't particularly like each other, according to rumor. But there's still time for somebody to step forward and surprise the hell out of us.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine in the universe of people who are big enough names, who are able to sort of pull all of this together. I think the Conservative Party would welcome an outsider if it was a person of some kind of stature, but a famous hockey player kind of thing, something that plays to their brand. But the Canadian universe is pretty small when it comes to politics. And, unless you go completely outside of politics and, a Jordan Peterson wants to run.
I'm thinking some figures outside of politics, some people who were known as, powerful business people or people who have a public profile through media or whatever.
Ben Mulroney's already said no.
Yeah. they could run his son, Ben, because there's a lot of political substance there. I think that we'll have to just keep our eyes open.
It's going to unfold quickly, I think, because they're going to have to put up or shut up with their $300,000, $200,000 of which is non-refundable deposit, and see, it'll really separate the boys from the big boys.
And it's not really unfortunate to have it that high, because there probably are some perhaps decent, worthy people who would like to get in, but that cost of admission is just so elitist and so designed to be a barrier to anybody but the most wealthy, most connected, most approved of institutional conservatives. And
I mean, the idea is to keep the crazies out too. I mean, to the extent
it can be lower than that. You know what? Yeah. Crazies can't even raise 20,000.
Yeah. Well, there's someone who's announced Clayton Knudsen. You're going who? Who's a former Freedom Conservative Party candidate in Alberta. He announced that he was going to be a candidate towards the end of December. I don't think he's put up the money yet, but there are people who have won issues or crazy issues or something. But like I say, so high price.
Hey, listen, it's entirely talking about raising 200,000 to 300,000. If you get a candidate who steps up and says, "I am going to institute a new abortion law in this country," there are enough people.
Oh, absolutely.
That could make that could get that person into the race, anyways. Yeah.
Well, and we saw there's oil money certainly behind the Conservative Party, which is no surprise to anyone. And they've got deep pockets, and they're even though they're feeling the pinch. And I think
their pinch is not the pinch of the average person.
No, they're not.
They're not deciding which bills to pay this month.
No, exactly. I don't know if I can afford Netflix this month.
Yeah, I don't know. My kids' braces or repairing the car. These aren't the kind of pinches that they feel out in the oil industry.
Yeah, but if the Conservatives are smart, they'll realize that they can't be captive to the oil industry anymore because Canada is moving on, and that plays really well in Alberta and parts of Saskatchewan, but nowhere else particularly. Not because we hate oil, but because, you know,
I don't hate oil, and I'm fully aware that oil is going to be, you know, petroleum products are going to be a part of our future for a very, very long time. So let's come up with plans that realistically take that into account, and you know, try to address that and reduce pollution, do positive things without this idea that we must stop all fossil fuels and all fossil fuel products now. It's like, good. Why don't you go over there in the corner and keep screaming while the adults try to figure out how in a real world we're going to improve things.
And I think the Conservatives have learned that they cannot be just an Alberta rump party if they are going to be national party.
Have they learned anything? Well, they didn't learn after getting beaten the first time by Trudeau. Well, they certainly didn't learn in the last campaign.
No.
I didn't see any education
I think Kenny learned it, because what Kenny, and this is, he got bounced around as an idea as a federal conservative leader as well in the upcoming leadership. But, he's quite sensibly said, no, I can be a petro politician in Alberta. Thank you very much. I can get all their money. I can play to all the fears of the oil patch, and I can be premier forever like Ralph Klein. And I don't need the trouble of making, speaking French, making Quebec happy, making the Maritimes happy. I can just be,
his own thing.
I can be boss hog here.
And then there was, speaking of boss hog, then there was Doug Ford, who everyone knew had ideas that the premiership would be a stepping stone to federal, and then became premier, discovered that the job is much more difficult than
politics
he thought.
Politics is hard. Yeah.
Yeah. And he is, I think, the least popular premier in the country, and if you can't win Ontario, you can't win. So he wisely said, I'm sure he had to eat crow, and it probably gave him indigestion, which makes me very, very happy considering what families of autistic children have had to go through, for example. But he stepped out. We'll see. I mean,
it's the job nobody wants, except for apparently Peter McKay.
Except for Peter McKay. Well, Stephen, this has been once again an entertaining conversation, and hopefully
other
people.
Something to talk about.
Yeah, hopefully other people enjoy as much as you and I enjoy talking to each other. And you feel free, if you're listening and you want to have comments or questions, put them up on our Facebook page. We'll be glad to answer.
Tweet to us.
Yeah, tweet to us. Stephen is at Stephen Lawtens, and he's StephenLautens. And I am at Stephen J. Kersner. That's StevenJKerzner. Though I am terrible at checking my personal Twitter. But feel free to give us feedback, because it does help us to shape our shows and to know what direction we're going in. But seems like the audience is building and building, and it was pretty good when we premiered. So if you have topics you want to hear us address, please tell us, because we're here for you. That's one of the things that FU stands for. For you. One of the many things. Farmers United. It could stand for many things. But FU stands, of course, first and foremost for an attitude, which is that to the powers that be, you're not going to shut us up. You're not going to take the voices of people who are not political elites or media elites and shut us down. We are going to provide a platform for people who aren't interested in hearing the jargon and aren't interested in hearing the somewhat masturbatory political pundits go on and on and then, push their book at the end. We're here because we want to have conversations and promote conversations on all of our FU politics shows that anybody can listen to, anybody can understand. We don't dumb anything down, but we also don't try to put a barrier in it by using big words when we can use words that are much more easily understandable, because we want to restore that level of public dialogue in this country that has been rather wiped out by being dominated in political issues by those very people, by political pundits, by political proxies, by people like that using jargon that they all enjoy talking about, but the average person is like, it doesn't make the issue clear to them, and it doesn't promote national dialogue, which we need. That's what we're trying to do here. Not trying. That's what we've been doing here on FU Politics. And if you'd like to help support that, we have a Patreon, which is a monthly subscription. It helps us keep the lights on. You can go there. It's Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/FUNetworkTV. Or if you want to give a one-time donation, you don't want to be committed to a monthly Disney Plus kind of thing, you can just give us a one-time boost at PayPal, where our address is FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. So thank you, and hopefully you'll support us. And thank you, Stephen.
Hey, always a pleasure.
And to Mrs. Lawton's, I really tried hard to watch my language.
You know, oh, I should have told you at the beginning, my mother's out of the country for this week. Oh, so you could have sworn up a blue streak.
I could have gone, oh, my God, here I was trying to watch my language using crap instead of shit and all this. And now it's, oh, well,
okay, you know what? Next week, if people tune in, next podcast, I'll tell you the story about the only time I heard my mother swear.
So. Okay. We look forward to
something.
That
there's
one.
A tease.
Okay. thank you all for listening. This is Stephen and Stephen with Stephen Lawtons and Stephen Kersner on FU Politics, which is part of FUN, the FU Network. See us at funetwork.tv.
This is FUN, the FU Network.